for being with us today. Appreciate your interest in the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I think you probably know a little bit about this process. We'll turn it back to you for some opening comments, and then open it to the council for questions for you. And then at the end, if you have any closing comments, hopefully all within 45 minutes. So.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You've got the floor. Yes.
One first one. I've gotten permission from Mr. Taylor to go to a meeting with the Boy Scouts, another one of my it's a great brand like the university, so I'm sorry that I'll be flipping out correctly. But,
excused absence.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Doran.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I've had a chance to introduce myself, but my name again is Kelly Doran. I'm very humbled and appreciative to be here today and to interview in the process to hopefully become a University of Minnesota Board of Regents, on the Board of Regents. A little bit of background about me. I've been involved in commercial real estate for more than 30 years. I started my company, the Doran Companies, in 2007. Prior to that, I was involved in a 15-year partnership with my mentor, a gentleman named Bob Muir. During that partnership, the two of us built, along with our team, over 4 million square feet of commercial real estate across the mainly the Twin Cities, places like Woodbury, St. Cloud, Blaine, Coon Rapids, Bloomington, Minneapolis, and elsewhere. I formed the company in Doran Companies, as I said, in 2007. We started our organization. We've turned it in that time frame into one of the leading and largest commercial real estate developers, architectural and construction companies in the state and Midwest. We have built many millions of square feet of commercial real estate across the state, Minneapolis, Maple Grove, Hopkins, Edina, Brooklyn Park, Shakopee, Duluth, elsewhere. And we routinely develop, design, finance, build, own, and manage projects in the $50 to $100 million range or more. And since 2007, we've gone from 7 employees to 175 employees. And we indirectly employ thousands of others through our subcontractor relationships. Collectively, our organization has developed multiple billions of dollars of commercial real estate here in the area. We've won many awards. We've received many different types of recognition. We've been named a top workplace by the Star and Tribune. I have personally been named the Executive of the Year by the Minnesota Real Estate Journal and most admired CEO by the Minneapolis Business Journal, Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal. We win these awards because of our keen attention to detail, our exceptional design, our cost-effective construction, and the financial success of our developments. But we've also built here around the campus. We've been involved in 6 projects around the Twin City campus. Those 6 projects have an aggregate value in exceeding $300 million. We built Sydney Hall on 15th Street, kitty corner from McDonald's, if you're familiar with that building. That was a parking lot and a smaller retail building. And we actually bought a piece of property from the university. I think we were one of the few people that the university ever sold land to. And so that was quite an accomplishment to be able to get that done in order to build that project done. It's also named after my youngest daughter, whose name is Sydney. We also renovated the historic Dinky Dome, which was a complete mess with rat carcasses in the walls and leaking everything. That was a building that dates back to the early days of the campus and was originally home to the Minneapolis Bible College. And then we also built 412 Lofts, the Edge, the Knoll, and the Bridges. Bridges is the taller building on University Avenue and 35W, if you're familiar with that area. We no longer own those buildings, but we were proud to be involved with them. And we really felt that we were proud to be involved in the reinvigoration of the residential life on campus. Not just us, but others. We in the last 10 years or so, I think there's been a great investment in the campus and the surrounding areas. I think that's really changed the dynamics of the university. I think it's made it a world-class college. I think before it was cold and a hard place to live, and it was a hard place to recruit, and in many cases, according to people I've talked to at the university. And I think these buildings, as well as the investment that the university and the state has made in the area, have really set a new direction for the campus. I'm deeply proud of the organization we built and the lives we have positively impacted. I think I can bring that extensive experience to the Board of Regents, and it would be my great honor to be part of that process. So some of the lessons I've learned at the university. My family has a multi-generational relationship with the university. My father graduated from the pharmacy school back in the late 40s. My sister graduated with a degree in horticulture. I attended and graduated with a bachelor's and master's degree. My son has attended the university, and although he's not finished, I hope someday he'll get back here. But there's really no institution in my mind in the state that is more important to the state and more than not in another institution that I care more about. And a lot of what I am today is a direct result of the influence that the university's had on my life. When I attended the university back in the late 70s and early 80s, we did not have a lot of money. It was really the only place I could afford to go. I didn't have the opportunity to even apply anywhere else because I didn't have the money to go there. I lived at home. I worked part-time jobs. I commuted to school, I paid for school myself using part-time jobs, student loans, and working through the summers. Graduate school, I was also fortunate enough to be selected as a teaching assistant in the business school, which is now called Carlson, as you well know. But I think the most important thing I learned by being at the U was not so much the facts and figures or the dates. What I learned that was most importantly was how to learn. And I think that I took that away as a lifelong experience and an ability to be able to take information, put it together, connect the dots, understand how it works, and apply that. And I think that's helped make me into what I am today, and I think that's also something that I can bring to a position on the Board of Regents. The other thing I learned at the U was that what impressed me when I was attending there and continued to impress me thereafter was the essence of the giving back to the community that the university is so focused on. Whether it's through the research programs that evolve into companies or private or organizations or research or that affects people's lives, but or just the attitude of giving back to the community in general. And I've taken that to heart in my life. I have donated my time, my money, and we've lent our experience to many, many organizations. I have provided and donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the University of Minnesota. I've also provided residential scholarships to a number of students, particularly from the Minneapolis Public Schools, where I also attended, whose families could not afford, they might have been able to afford to attend the U, but they wouldn't afford to live at the U. And so I provided scholarships to, so far, eight university students where I'm paying for their rent for their entire 4 years here at the university. And then we've also hired a number of graduates from the university, from various parts of the university, including the School of Architecture. So why do I want to be on the Regents? I was raised, as I said, by a single mom. We lived in South Minneapolis on the 5900 block of Newton Avenue. My dad left us when we were young. My mom worked multiple jobs in order to support my three older sisters and I. And she taught me a lot. And she taught me about tenacity. She taught me about grit. She taught me about hard work and perseverance. And she instilled those values in me at a young age. And I've retained that through my life. And simply because of those attributes, I think, was really the singular focus of why I was able to make it through the university. When I attended the university, the standards were maybe not quite as high as they are today. And if you could fog a mirror, you could get in. Today, in many cases, the university was a school of last choice, and today it's a school of first choice. And so huge progress has been made. And I wanted to I want to be part of that. I want to be part of the continued growth of this organization. I want to be part of the strategic planning of this organization. And I want to be a part of setting the groundwork to take this organization into the next 100 years. Why do I think I'm capable of doing that? I'm a strategic thinker. I'm a creative thinker. We obviously, if you're in the real estate development business, there's a lot of process you go through that in order to see a project to fruition. And I think we're good at that, and we're good at thinking through how that is. Obviously, being in that business, I'm also an optimist. And you have to be a positive person in order to fight through the various things that you have to do, but still be a realist. And I think I obtain all of those things. I'm also very experienced at evaluating an organization's finances. I've been involved in the formation of many organizations and many entities, and I'm currently involved in that, and I run multiple entities simultaneously today. I also think I'll bring a unique experience to a very important part of the university, and that's the real estate portfolio. I think beyond, if the University of Minnesota is the singular most important asset to the state of Minnesota, in my mind, the campuses of the university are the single most important asset within the university. And I think there's a need to look at that and how that's going to grow and how that's going to service the community and students attending it into the future. I've been involved in lots of different real estate transactions. I'm experienced in not only the financing, although the university's financing role would be different. I'm experienced in the legal aspect of those things, as well as the organizational aspect. And I also bring a strong relationship with many elected leaders at various levels. I have personal relationships with many local leaders, state leaders, as well as federal leaders. And I think I can add to the connection points from the Board of Regents to those levels as well. Real estate is by definition a series of partnerships. I've been involved in many transactions, as I've said. I've been involved in private-public partnerships as well as private-private partnerships. I've led industry groups. I've been involved as a board member in a number of them, as well as many other private boards. I clearly understand the difference between guiding an organization versus running an organization. I've played both roles and been involved in those roles many, many times. I also think that when you're involved in the business I'm in, there's many, many parts to it, and it takes a real effort to bring people together, to let them see your vision. Real estate is nothing but a vision, and it starts out that way, and it starts out with a need, and it starts out with trying to explain that need to people that come from varying backgrounds and have different stakeholder interests in it. And that may be from a city standpoint, a county standpoint, a state agency standpoint, a municipal standpoint, a state standpoint, a political standpoint, or a neighbor. And all of those things, I think we've developed a strong set of skill set that has allowed us to be very successful in that. And I think all of those would be attributes that would be beneficial to the university and in a role and on the regions. I'm open for questions.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to start with the first question, which has to do with the University of Minnesota's land-grant mission. Obviously, the University of Minnesota is our state's land-grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well, I think the purpose of a land-grant institution as it was formed by the Merrill Act was that was to retain a certain level of independence from other pressures within society and government. And I think that's a fine line to walk today, and I think the university does, to the best of my knowledge, a pretty good job in doing that. I think that independence is important and needs to be maintained, and while yet still working in a cooperative basis with others with whom this institution affects. And, you know, whether that be the city of Minneapolis or the state of Minnesota or many other government bodies involved. But I think maintaining and cultivating that independence is very important.
Council members, second question. Council member Menon.
Thank you, and thank you for being here today, Mr. Dorn. My question relates to crisis management. The University of Minnesota has dealt with a number of crises in the last few years, whether it's to do with things to do with the political climate or sexual assault. And as a member of the Board of Regents, it would be you would have to face a lot of the brunt of those crises. What do you think are the most important aspects of crisis management, and how does that factor into making decisions as a collaborative with the 11 other members of the Board of Regents?
Well, I think you can't allow crisis to become a personal crisis. I think you have to look at remain calm. I think you have to look at the facts. I think you have to examine them. I think you have to look at the ramifications of those facts. And decide then what's the proper course of action to take. Sometimes those decisions are difficult. Sometimes they're very straightforward and right out there in front of you. But it's processing the facts of the situation and moving forward, I think, is the most important thing.
Thank you.
Councilmember Carlson.
When I was CEO of the Alumni Association for 25 years, I dealt with real estate development, mm-hmm. with the McNamara Alumni Center, Scholars Walk, Regents Plaza, and the list goes on and on. I have a personal bias that I'd like you to address. And I have found that the independent entrepreneurs, particularly in real estate development, would always talk about when they came to the alumni board that they guided, not ran, things. But in reality, they couldn't hold back. They wanted to tell rather than shared governance or shared listening. So my question to you, what was a thorny issue that you dealt with at the University of Minnesota in real estate development where you had to say, maybe not out loud, I think you're wrong, but I'm going to accept what you're saying? And you can
address
the bias and the example.
No, your bias is probably a fair observation. I think a natural, if you wanted to classify personality types, most real estate developers would probably fall in the type A personality type. I think there is some validity to your comment about looking to probably get things done and moving them forward rather than allowing other people to do that around. I think there's some strong validity to that. I think maybe I'm a little older and wiser than some of those developers that you have spoken to.
Well, you're not that much older, but go ahead.
Well, thank you. I think there's many instances where we have had to bend to the will of others. When we were renovating the Dinky Dome and building Sydney Hall, we had issues with the fraternity houses next door. And we had to compromise and allow them to win in order to ultimately be successful in our development. Were they right in their position? In my mind, no. But did we acquiesce to that in order to move something forward and to look at the bigger picture from that standpoint? Yes. I listened in that case to my advisors and to my lawyers and decided that they were right, and that even though my instincts were probably to go a different direction, they were right in the end. And that's not uncommon. And I think in order to create a win-win development, you have to do that in a lot of instances. And I don't think that's I've been involved in lots of organizations, and there are, and including my own right now, where I am transitioning out of my organization, and I'm allowing people that I've hired to continue on. It's become a large organization. We have a lot of really talented people, and you have to allow those people to make those decisions. You have to, whether you agree with them or not, you have to let them learn, and you have to, in many cases, they're right, and whether they're right or wrong, they'll learn from it and then move the organization forward.
Thank you. Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Dorn, for being here. Minnesota is one of the worst states in our nation in terms of racial equality, and people of color still face significant disparities here. In your opinion, what's the role of the university in building a more equitable landscape for everyone to succeed?
Well, I think it's a huge part of the role of the university to do that. I think it's only good for our state, and it's only good for our society, and it's only good for our economy to do that. I think that there are unique challenges associated with that. I see that in my own business, by way of example. Although we have a very high level of women in our organization, we struggle to hire people of color. And some of that is they're not there. and we'd love to have them be there. And so we work with places like Summit Academies and some of the other organizations to try to foster that. And I think it's an organic process that's going to take time. But all efforts and all guidance should be made towards facilitating that and making that happen. I mean, that's really one of the reasons I'm paying for 8 kids to live here on the campus. They all come from the Minneapolis Public Schools, 4 are from Patrick Henry and 4 are from Southwest. I think 7 of the 8 of them are students of color. They have strong families, but they come from meager means. I felt that when I was growing up. And so I think to be able to provide that opportunity to them to hopefully do that, and I hope, and one of the conditions I put on that when I gave that scholarship to them was a commitment from them that they would give it back someday when they could. And so hopefully we can create a multiple effect of that and as we move forward, and it will continue to grow. I hope that answered your question.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us today. Talk to us a little bit about kind of the passion for being involved in kind of higher education policy. Given your background and your experience, you could devote your time to many different areas across the community. Just want to understand a little bit why higher ed, and what are some of the things you've done to date on kind of getting up to speed on some of the challenges specific to higher ed. I know we've talked a little bit about real estate side, but specific to higher ed, and what would you do, should you be a region, to kind of get up to speed on what are the challenges in higher education?
Well, first of all, I would have a lot to learn if I'm selected to do that. But I've always been a believer, I think maybe because of my own experiences, in the benefit of education. And I don't know that that focus in my life has always necessarily been limited to higher ed. I think education, period, helps advance people through their life. And whether that they ultimately end up at a college program or they end up at a vo-tech program, that education will help advance their life and make them a more and better contributor to our society. I think the higher education process was so fundamental to my success that I want to make sure that I can extend that as far as I can. And I can continue to do things the way I'm doing them on a small scale, or I think this is an opportunity to do it on a bigger scale. And I think my experiences and my abilities can help in that regard.
A probe to follow up on the last question. I haven't had a chance to look at the brochure, but I glanced at it, and I did see a page that I'm going to refer to. You ask why higher education. My question would be why the Regents? And because what we're looking for is fit. And, you know, as I look at you, I look at the brochure, I look at your giving back, you seem to be a perfect candidate for the University of Minnesota Foundation, the trustees. What would your reaction to be to me if I was a state legislator and you dropped this off to me and I'd studied it and I ask you that question?
Well, I guess my answer to that question would actually be on both.
The independent entrepreneur, I'm not surprised.
Councilmember,
thank you.
Councilmember Englund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Dorn, for your interest in serving on the Regents and for your contributions to the university. My question is this. You know, sometimes when people describe leadership in higher education, not just at the university, but in general, as they make a comparison to the art of herding cats. And my question to you is, you have built a very successful career, a very successful business, it bears your name. I'm going to guess that you are a powerful leader and a decisive leader. I'm wondering if you've thought about the complexity of the process at the University of Minnesota and sometimes the pace of decision-making that goes along with that. And do you think that your instinct may be to move faster, your instinct may be to move in a more decisive way, but in reality, it may take longer and it may be more complicated than you anticipated? And will you be patient with that for 6 years?
I have no doubt there will be moments in time where I will be prepared to pull my own hair out. And I think that's probably a realistic view. I know myself well enough to know that I can temper that to understand how the wheel turns and the process that we'll take, and that at the end of the day, it's the result is as important as the process. And so, yeah, I believe I can be patient, and I believe that I can, but at the same time, hopefully nudge things along as fast as they can go. I think that there's a great opportunity here in our community to continue to enhance the relationship with the university and the business community. I think there's a lot of strong connection points there. I think they could be stronger. I think there is a perception in the business community by many that the university is kind of this bloated administrative organization. Hopefully I can help with that, and hopefully we can mend some of those things and bring those people together. I think what I also bring in that process, I think that it's the creative thinking. How, you know, sometimes it's not a straight line between point A and point B. Sometimes you have to go in circles, and sometimes you have to go in a zigzag. I've had the opportunity to be a guest lecturer at the Carlson School of Business to many times. That's one of the things I put on the chalkboard, is I put a point A and I put a point B, and I ask, how do you get there? And it's not a straight line. It's not a straight line in business either. And so I understand that, and I think I can adapt to that.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Mr. Dorn, thanks so much for your interest in this opportunity. Probably every one of the discussions we've had to date touched at some point on the cost of tuition and student debt. And everybody is concerned about it. Everybody would like to deal with it. Now, in the spirit of full transparency, I've served as a member of my Fraternity House Corporation board for more than 20 years. And I do know that many of the properties that you referenced in your introduction have a much higher cost than a bed at my fraternity, and they require a 12-month lease rather than an 8 or a 9-month lease. And my personal belief is that if that fact is accurate, that might have some bearing on the total student debt issue. So I wanted you to be aware from where I'm coming and ask if you would wish to address that from your point of view as a commercial real estate developer.
Sure. I think one of the things that we learned along the way was, and why I think our buildings were as successful as they were at the university campus, and they all leased up, and most of them ran at 100% leased year after year. And also we were selected many times through the Grapevine Awards as being the top manager on the campus when we owned those buildings. I think that some of what you say is just not accurate, with all due respect. What we learned along the way is that there were many instances where kids were willing to share a bedroom. And so when they were willing to share a bedroom, the cost of occupancy per bed was between $500 and $600. That would be very comparable to what a frat house would charge. That would be very comparable to what an old house would charge. But we provide a safe, up to code, amenity rich environment that's conducive to studying. And I think that's why those buildings are successful. I don't think, quite honestly, that if you look at inflation rates, the inflation rate of tuition is much greater than the cost of housing, if you're willing to sacrifice a little bit. If you want to go live in one of those buildings and you want to live in your own apartment privately, you're going to pay a higher rent. My assumption is that you or your family can afford to do that. But if you're not one of that and you want to live and you're willing to share a room, you're willing to share an apartment with multiple people, and you're willing to look at those things wisely and not have a car on campus and not pay for parking and all those kinds of things, you can live pretty reasonable at $500 or $600 a month.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Doran, for your interest in this position. I was intrigued by your comment about some things take creative thinking to do. My question is going to be related specifically to professional schools. By the way, I'm a graduate of the medical school. And a large part of this $4 billion budget of the university is attributed to the health sciences. Mm-hmm. The medical school provides about 80% of the practitioners in this state. And the rankings of our medical school compared to a couple decades ago are much lower. We were consistently in the top 10 in the country a couple decades ago, and now we're maybe mid-30s. And what ideas might you have how to improve the rankings of our medical school or other professional schools amongst those other schools we're going to be compared to within the country?
You know, I don't know that I have a reasonable answer to that. I think it's, I understand the statistics, I've read them. It would certainly be not only on the medical school, but in all schools, our goal to improve their rankings, my goal of improving their rankings. There would be a lot I would have to learn in order to give you that full answer. So, you know, if I'm selected, we'll have lunch in a year and I'll tell you a heck of a lot more. I do think it's disturbing. Part of it's probably the partnership with Fairview has had some ramifications of that, I'm assuming. It could be any number of other factors. I don't know. I would certainly be interested in that. I don't see why the University of Minnesota, with the environment that we have here, and this campus being right in the middle of a major metropolitan area, why we aren't at the top end of every school ranking. Why would you not want to live in Minneapolis and go to school at the University of Minnesota? And I think we have a lot to offer, and we need to figure out how to make that happen.
Just one other comment. You mentioned the Fairview University Academic Health Center arrangement, and I'm sure you're aware that they now have a new agreement within the past couple of months or so. Mm-hmm. Do you have any comment about that and how that might be different from their previous arrangements from several years ago?
I don't know all the details of that agreement. Obviously, it took a long time to get there. It was strenuous, as I understand, on both sides in order to get there. I will be poking and prodding to find out more when I have access to some of that information.
Thank you.
Councilmember Miltimore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Doran, I want to echo the comments of others thanking you for being here and for your interest. Just quoting from the written submission that you had, you say that, quote, addressing the cost of tuition and student debt would be your top priorities, which is commendable. You also add, I think, something very interesting. Earlier, you say, in the nonprofit world, the most misguided questions organizations too often ask themselves include, how can we do more with less? As a very successful businessman, you understand, you've balanced many budgets, and you understand that there's a cost side and an expense side and a revenue side. If for the sake of argument, we say that sort of the triad of funding for the university, tuition, state support, and maybe private sector, maybe those are at their limits. Is there room on the cost side to bring back, to keep in line student tuition increases or roll them back? And if so, do you have any specific ideas how that might look or how that might be implemented to achieve that? Thank you.
Well, I think to pull a rabbit out of the hat to say that you're just going to look at the cost side is probably not realistic. The university has gone through a 5-year program under President Kaler to identify $90 million in savings. That's 2.3% of this year's budget and less than one half of 1% over the five-year process. That is not, I mean, it's a meaningful number, but it's not meaningful in the terms of having a direct influence on lowering the cost of tuition or alleviating student debt. I think you need to be more creative on that. I think the university needs to be involved in a much greater opportunity with technology and how technology can help in the learning cycle. The Crookston campus does actually a pretty good job of that. I know several kids who are taking classes here in Minneapolis from Crookston. I think that needs to be further explored, and I need to understand more about that, but I think that's one avenue. I think there's also an opportunity to shorten the college experience. I'd like to see the university really explore whether some of these degree programs could be done in 3 years, full-time, all year round. That alone, going back to your question, would alleviate thousands of dollars of expenses and thousands of dollars of potential debt. And that's not applicable across the board, I would wager, but there are probably areas where that is applicable and where that would become a real advantage to certain kids and also bring kids lower means or people of color or other aspects into that process as well.
Thank you. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dorn, first of all, thank you for your contributions to Augsburg University and the Step Up program. It's a great program and appreciate your support on that.
It was my pleasure.
Question that I have, there's a lot of talk in the state of Minnesota about workforce needs in the technical skills area. And yet a report that recently came out said that the greatest need continues to be in four-year degrees. We also know that the university is, if you look at the national average for contributions from the state, we're about 9% below the national average as far as supporting the university by the legislature. We also know that you've mentioned a little bit about workforce. We're in a changing society. Jobs of today won't be in existence maybe 3 years, 4 years from now. In looking at the role of the university in providing workforce needs for the state of Minnesota, what are your thoughts on how do you keep up on that, knowing that you're going to have limited dollars in the future?
Well, I think that is a huge challenge. First of all, let me just back up a little bit and talk about the Step Up program, for example. For those of you that aren't familiar with it, the Step Up program at Augsburg is a wonderful program that is geared towards students with addiction issues to bring them back to college and put them in a safe, structured environment to allow them to continue their education. I actually proposed that to the University of Minnesota. I offered to build a building to help do that, and unfortunately it was rejected. And so that's another area I'd love to see the University of Minnesota grow into, because it's a huge issue out there with kids in high school age with addiction issues, opiate addiction issues particularly. I have that in my own family, and so I understand the impact that that takes and the difficulty it would be to be a young student in college and faced with being addicted to drugs or alcohol. On the workforce issue, again, I think it really is going to require our whole system to think more boldly about how we're going to fulfill the manpower needs going forward of our economy. I said a few minutes ago about, is it possible to look at some of these programs as three-year programs? What would that do in terms of bringing more workers into the workforce in order to fulfill the needs? We cannot hire enough people in our business. And it's not just construction laborers. We actually have very few construction laborers in our organization because we mainly use subcontractors for that. We can't hire professionals. There are not enough architects. There are not enough engineers. There are not enough consultants that have specialty in environmental science or other things like that, soil conditions, etc. So we cannot hire enough people. And so we need to figure out a way to be creative and bring people through a system if faster. You know, universities love to talk about six-year graduation rates. To me, that's really disappointing, a six-year graduation rate. We can do better than that. I'd like to see us do that. I'd like to see the guidance by the Board of Regents aspire to push that forward.
Thank you.
Council Member Menon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to circle back to the issue of diversity and education and our university's role in that. You obviously put a lot of thought and I have a lot of respect, and you've contributed financially to support the idea that you have, that education really boosts people, and it's a great opportunity for people to change their circumstances. So outside of what we can do to be a more inclusive environment at the university, what do you think our role is in helping students of color get to the university? Because many times they don't have access to that opportunity, and they fall by the wayside during their years in K through 12.
Well, I think there's an opportunity perhaps not only for the university to participate directly in that by reaching down into the public school systems and hopefully encourage those partnerships to be established. I think we're seeing that to some degree in the charter school process, where the charter schools are, I was on the board for a number of years in the Hiawatha Leadership Academy, 99.9% of the kids are people of color or Hispanic. And you know, their curriculum is, that school is full of banners that tout going to college. And they start that process at the first and second grade about where you're going to go to college. But not every kid needs to go to college. And I think that's working. Perhaps there's also partnerships that could be done with MNSCU. And how can we collaborate as a total educational system to further those goals? It should be a huge priority. Our state is deficient in it, and it should be a primary focus of the not only the university management, but the guidance that they receive from the Board of Regents.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Candidate Doran, for your application.
I have a new title.
Yeah. I have a question for you, and I'm not sure if you don't think it's relevant in this setting, you just let me know. But I know that businesses and developers and really... And I'm not sure if businesses do or not, now that I think about it. I know transportation does in minority and women-owned businesses. I don't know what role you played in trying to increase more minority and women-owned businesses into your subcontract work. And the reason I ask that is because we're going to need systemic changes in Minnesota. And if you think there's any comparison or anything of value to add, how your experience in doing that, and if you even did it, to how you could help bring systemic changes to create an environment where people of all backgrounds can succeed and be successful at the University of Minnesota.
My company does not do government work. Okay, so we don't have the requirements of some of those programs for women and minority-owned businesses. But we certainly reach out to that, and we certainly try to do all we can do. Quite honestly, unfortunately, in our industry, there aren't a lot. There are just not a lot of women-owned. There are probably more women-owned general contractors than there are subcontractors. And so in that regard, they're competitors, not potential hires. There are less minority and women-owned subcontractors, and it's just, I wish it was different. And if it was, we would have no problem hiring somebody like that. It just doesn't exist to the level that it would be ideal. I'm not answering your question very well, but I don't know how to go beyond that.
No, that's fine. And I knew when I asked the question that I realized you were in a transportation contractor and it might not apply, but I thought there might be some information sharing that would be helpful.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. As Councilmember England mentioned, sometimes things can be a very drawn-out process in terms of change and policy and different things of that nature. But as you probably know, we've got a new president here at the University of Minnesota, Joan Gable. And so I want you to put on your new president hat. If there was one objective you could achieve in your first 6 months as president of the University of Minnesota, what initiative would you undertake and why?
I would probably look at the subcommittees of the regents. I would probably seek to take away from the finance and operations subcommittee and establish a new committee that would result, that would involve the physical plant, the physical assets of the University of Minnesota. I think it's of such importance. Obviously, it's near and dear to my own background, but it's of such importance that it deserves to stand alone and not be it. I think the university wastes an incredible amount of money on procuring and real estate services. And I know that for a fact. And so I think I can lend great credibility to stretching those dollars to assist in the growth of the physical aspects of the university.
Thank you. Councilmember Farrell. And then we'll end with
I want to back up to something
you said. Old neighbors, by the way, just so you know.
We bought a lot of Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
We played a lot of hot box out in the street between other kids.
There you go. All of that. So I want to back up to something you said. I, too, went to University of Minnesota as an undergraduate. My degree is business. I got to live in Middlebrook Hall, and I had a fabulous view. It was a wonderful place to be, and I fell in love with the Twin Cities campus, walked across the river every day, and all of that. Because I heard you say, two things I heard you say. First of all, I needed the summers to wait as many tables as I could at Steak and Ale and save my dollars so I could afford to return in the fall. So everything doesn't fit for everybody, but what you suggest is interesting. And you said, why wouldn't anybody come to the university, to the Twin Cities? It's just fabulous. And I quite agree. But the Board of Regents is very attentive to the entire system, and we know that all of our campuses are a part of that system and very dear to the state of Minnesota. So I just want to give you the chance to talk about the system in total and how you feel.
I think the system in total is a critical part of the whole thing. I have experience up at the Duluth campus. We have built buildings literally across the street from the Duluth campus. I'm familiar with that and the good work that they do up there. I was born in Duluth, so I'm near and dear to that community. I've been to Rochester. I've seen the start of that campus and the location of where it is and how that's going to go. And I think that in conjunction with a partnership with the Mayo Clinic is just a great opportunity to expand that, particularly on the healthcare side. I'm less familiar with the Crookston campus. I've not been there. I've not been to the Morris campus either. But obviously I would be there, and I would understand those campuses. I would understand the physical aspects of them, and I'm sure they're just as delightful as they are here in the Twin Cities. I had the opportunity to commute to school every day, and so I had a great view of the Mississippi River because I parked in the parking lot on the West Bank that's now a park. So climb those stairs. So,
one last question from Councilmember Carlson.
We have a new university president coming on July 1st. She will undoubtedly meet with each new regent. You're sitting down with her, and she says to you, what is the best advice you can give me as a new president? What would you say to her?
Get out into the community. Okay. Go meet with people. Meet with political leaders, the business leaders, the academic leaders of this city and state, and get out there as soon as you can and do that as often as you can.
And then she says to you, who are the top three people on that list?
Kelly Dorn.
Kelly, you're not surprised.
I'm just feeding into you a little bit. I would probably tell her to go meet with Governor Walz, would be early on that list. Maybe Charlie Weaver or the business partnership would be high on that list. And I would probably meet with Mayor Fry.
Okay.
Those would be probably three of the top people that I would, if I had to pick three people.
Chair,
one quick question.
Oh, okay.
I know nothing about medical procedures.
Not going to ask that question.
Okay.
No, one of the things to know, Ian, you mentioned it in your description that you have been involved with a lot of university properties over the years, including owning some of them, and saying you've divested yourself of all of those at this point. Do you foresee any point of conflict either with current, past, or future land developments with the university that you could be in conflict with your company?
No.
Thank you.
I have none.
Okay, that concludes our questioning. Would you like to make some closing statement?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Mr. Chairman and committee. This would be a real honor to be it. I will tell you I will commit myself to it. It will get all the attention it deserves. I would be forever grateful to be involved in the future growth of the University of Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest in this position.